thoughts you want to improve in your relationships. With your host, Kathy Katz.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Kathy Katz, and I'm a communication and relationship coach. And through my weekly workshops and my one-on-one coaching, I try to help people communicate rationally and not emotionally. I've been doing this for about 5 years under the brand name TalkToKathy.com. And in all that time, I discovered that people do get better results. So that's why I created this show, to share what I've learned and allow others to do the same. So let's get started. We're here today with our engineer, Paul Roberts.
Really excited to hear who we have here today. Oh. Really excited. I won't give it away.
Oh, good. Don't give it away. I am so excited. I'm just so excited.
You were nervous. I never see you nervous. You were nervous before this show.
Well, this guest is super special. I mean, all my guests are special.
Yes.
But she is a woman that has demonstrated that she can be a woman with a career instead of being a career woman. And what does that mean? That means her family comes first and her career comes second. I'm going to give you a brief bio. She grew up in virtual squalor in Beverly Hills.
What?
She survived her upbringing by Barbara and Don Rickles.
Don Rickles, the famous Don Rickles. No, come on. Don Rickles?
Yes, and spent most every Christmas and Hanukkah in Las Vegas on the lawn of the Sahara Hotel, where she was entertained by cooks and maids. Hmm. Little Gloria, happy at last. She's married and is raising two boys in between bubble baths and naps. My kind of gal. She appears regularly at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, California, and performed on CBS's TV's Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson last year, acted with Jeff Garlin in his 2013 release, Dealing with Idiots, opened for Bob Saget at the Improv in Ontario, Tim Allen in Hollywood, and has toured with Louis Anderson in the Midwest. And it's my honor to introduce Mindy Rickles. Hi, Mindy.
Hi, how are you?
Great, 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 great. Thank you so much.
How do you grow up in virtual squalor in Beverly Hills?
I don't know. I must have been drinking. I wrote that bio because it sounds a little bit Leona Helmsley.
Yeah, it did.
A little bit of that back.
It did. I don't know. Is this like Mommy Dearest or something here?
I know. Well,
you know.
That's a whole other book.
Okay.
You know, Mindy, I just, like I said, I love the fact that you know how to take bubble baths, have an incredible family, and get to entertain in front of large audiences. I mean, what is it like? How did you discover you had the gift of comedy?
Well, I think that I was always, good or bad, very similar to my dad in terms of our sense of humor. And even, like, when I was dating, my dad would say, you know, no wonder this guy didn't call you again, because you were me. You know, I'm like him in a dress on the date. So that never was so great. But we were always very similar in that way. But he really, I did acting maybe like 20-some years ago. But he never really encouraged me to do stand-up. I mean, it's sort of, there's so many more women doing stand-up now. But so I never really did that. But I was always funny. And it was only a couple of years ago, 3 years ago actually, when, and my kids are teenagers now, when I met Jeff Garlin at my older son's school, and he suggested, he was like, you know, you're funny, you should do stand-up, I can help you with that. And I thought, well, you know, at this point in my life, if I either do it now or I never do it, so I thought, why not? So, and with, you know, comedy, it's nice that, you know, you can be sort of any age and start. So I started pretty late, but yeah, it's been 3 years now, and it's really been great and a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I share with women that come to me for coaching that a woman has to feel good to do good. And obviously, it must be so much fun to get up in front of that audience. I mean, what's it feel like?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, when it goes well, which mostly, I mean, you have, you know, everyone has the nights that the crowd is off or whatever. But no, it's a great feeling. And like my husband said, you know, now you don't have to do your show at dinner parties. You can... you know, be on a stage and whatever. So at least, yeah, I have that outlet that I can really work with. And I think the timing of it, even though I could look back and say, oh, there were so many years I could have done this, but the timing, I think, worked out really well now, as I said, that my kids are, you know, one is 14, one is 17. They're in school, and I've been married a long time. And I think stand-up is so difficult. For me personally, I don't think I would have had the confidence and, you know, being settled with myself as I am now at this point in my life. So I think it happened actually at the right time.
That's wonderful. And is Dad in your audience sometimes cheering you on?
Yes, he has seen me. And actually at his 89th birthday last year, my mother was like, "You'll be the entertainment." So I did perform at that. And he was like, "Did you make that up? You know, right when you were up there?" I'm like, "I did. You didn't? Wow, I'm impressed." So that was, he started to see, you know, God, she is funny, you know. So that's good, although he always says, you know, he gets nervous watching me, so.
Oh, really? He gets nervous?
Yeah.
Aww.
But, no, it's fun, and I think, you know, he's proud of me with it now.
And what about your kids? Do you use some of your material on them before you get on stage?
Yeah, they kind of know what I do, and, you know, I mean, most of what I, you know, they know, like, I make a joke about that my husband's really the primary caregiver for them. I'm like a funny aunt that drops by once in a while, which they sort of, they know that joke because, I mean, it's like if we're in a restaurant and, you know, my husband and the kids, I might order, my husband will say, maybe the kids would like something to eat, you know. I live in that bubble in my mind, like my dad, you know, it's about, they have a pillow at their house that my mother got him, which says, it's all about me. And that's sort of the joke because obviously I'm completely involved with my kids, but my husband's always like, could you help out, you know? So it's more that kind of dynamic where, you know, he's always like reminding me, you know, pick it up a little, so, which I do, and it's great. They're great boys, and they're totally fine with, you know, my mentioning them and stuff, like joking about them in my act.
So you have two sons, right?
Yes.
Two sons. That's so great, though, that they could see their mom, you know, getting to get into a career. And, you know, because I teach women, you know, when you're younger, you know, the baby making times. But a lot of women that I work with want to do the career first. And a lot of times they wait too long. So the fact that you know, your mom first, woman with a career, your family comes first. So congratulations. Yes. And it worked for you. And it worked for you, right?
Yeah, I think stand-up is a little different than maybe some other careers in that, as I said, you could sort of start at any age, and it does work because it's, you know, it's something I do at night, or like I was just touring with Louis Anderson, and I went touring for like a week, which for me was actually a really long time to be gone from my husband and kids. But it's not, you know, years ago, when I was in my early 30s and having kids, and I'm sure my dad thought of this too, you know, it was the idea that you have to go on the road for a month, you know, with a comic and open for them, you know, this kind of, so things like that would have never worked out, you know, at that point.
It was a different time, different times.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you want to share a little bit about those Christmas and Hanukkah lawn stories at the Sahara Hotel?
Well, it's funny that my husband wrote that, but actually, my mother always told me that, you know, when I was little, as a baby, I was on the crib on the lawn at the Sahara because I basically kind of grew up in that hotel.
Aww.
Because my dad worked there. We would all travel as a family every summer, and he'd be there maybe for 6 weeks. And my parents' best friends for like their entire marriage are Ginny and Bob Newhart. And Bob would be working maybe at the Hilton or the MGM, and they would go also with their four kids. So we were always together growing up, and, you know, together in Vegas, and Christmases, well, in L.A., we would always spend, which we still do, at their house. But we were always, together in Vegas, and I remember, I guess I would dress up like a waitress in the coffee shop at the Sahara and say, you know, Kino. And now when I mention on stage if something's not going well, I might say, Kino. No one knows what I'm talking about.
Over
50.
That over 50 crowd.
Right. You know, they're like, what is that? Is that something Ariana Grande? Is that her new song? You know.
Oh, my gosh.
So, my husband's always like, you got to stop, you know, when I first started the stand-up, stop with the Gloria Swanson instances. You know, you got to bring it down to the age range.
Is that difficult? Is that a difficult thing to do?
Very much so. I mean, I'm not 90, but I've always sort of been that way in my head. I love old movies.
Yes.
I love, you know, the 70s. Thing, you know, so my references and even movie references and things, you really have to know your audience, and most of them are very, very young. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. So I really can't make these obscure references that I love that they may not understand. So you know, I have to be myself, but I also have to be like, you know, how about that Keisha or whatever?
Yeah.
Just so I can be relatable to
them. I guess
them.
That would be a little challenging because you really don't know who your audience is going to be before you get out there. So that
no, you just kind of, and I like to talk to the audience. I mean, I do, I don't insult or, well, my father always did it in a kind way, but I'm not copying him in any way. But unfortunately, whatever, I say unfortunately, sometimes I'm like, feel like I'm channeling him because we have the same kind of intonations and the same similar sense of humor. So I like to talk to the audience, so I always like the lights up a little bit, so I see right away, I get a sense of who's there. You know, if it's older people, you know, I might say I'm thrilled that Aunt Seal and Uncle Lou could make it in from Miami Beach, but I wouldn't do that with, you know, a 25-year-old crowd kind of thing.
So
you just have to kind of judge right away what they're going to be like.
Wow, and that's a talent. I mean, that's a talent all in itself. I mean, to be able to just get up there and, you know, without practicing ahead of time in a mirror every morning, right? I mean,
right.
You're on. Do you sense a little bit of pressure when people find out you're Don Rickles' daughter?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there might be, I think I found it more in terms of starting so late when, you know, I've had things, you know, whether it be the touring or working with certain people that you might not very likely have gotten unless you were very lucky after only 3 years of doing stand-up, when people work, you know, 25 years or whatever, and, you know, they may not be doing certain things. So I think some comics might feel like, you know, you need to have done open mics for, like, you know, many, many years before you get to a certain point. But I figured at this point in my life, you know, it's hard enough with stand-up, and if I needed to come out with a hand puppet of my dad, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm not going to be like, let me struggle and whatever at this point. I'm too old, and I did acting, you know, years ago, some in my 20s, and I just, you know, I have to just do what I do and, you know, hope for the best and just know that that's something that I know I can do.
You feel it. You can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel it.
Yeah, I don't really get sometimes people, oh, I think I'll do stand-up. I mean, I didn't say I was going to do stand-up for, you know, my 20s and 30s, even though I knew I was funny because, you know, I figured it's so difficult. So when people, I'm sure there are many comics that just say, oh, I'm going to do stand-up, you know, it's a way to maybe I'll get on a TV show or someone will see me. I mean, to me, unless you know you can deliver it or you're a great writer and you have the presence, I mean, I don't get, unless you know you can do that, I don't know why anyone would just say, I think I'll do that.
Right. Like, but, you know, you've been living it for all these years. I mean,
right.
You know, you've been breathing it, eating it, living it, smelling it, literally.
Absolutely.
I mean, in the casinos in the day when people were smoking, I mean, you were, you know, right in the heart of it. And so when you were a teenager, though, we'll go back a little bit. Did you do any acting on stage or
No, I mean, I did, you know, in high school I did a little acting, and then it was always sort of like, oh, well, Mindy's going to be an actress. And it was mostly because I was funny and sort of imitated my parents' friends, and there was a famous comedian, Toadie Fields.
Oh, yes, I remember, yes.
There you go, right. So my parents were good friends with her growing up, and my mother, my parents would tell me, I mean, I don't really, when I was little, oh, I used to imitate her. I would imitate, you know, Bob Newhart's wife and all these. So it was always like, oh, Mindy's going to be an actress. So in my 20s, you know, I did you know, some TV and a movie or something. Nothing, you know, wasn't like any huge career, but it wasn't, you know, if unless it was specifically comedy related. I mean, now looking back, I know myself so much better. I would have really wanted to focus on, you know, comedic roles and the kinds of things. I mean, she's brilliant. I'm not comparing myself to her, but like a Melissa McCarthy or a Kristen Wiig, I mean, those kinds of things didn't really exist hardly then. You know, there was like Joan Rivers or Rita Rudner or someone like that. So, you know, that I think, but I was more sort of just vaguely doing auditioning, and it really wasn't, it didn't feel 100% me. So, you know, I did that through my 20s, and then kind of my late 20s is when I met my husband and I got married, and I sort of thought, yeah, I'm kind of done with that, because it wasn't something like with stand-up that I kind of have always known as a huge part of me, and I can do that. So that's sort of how, you know, originally when I did the acting those years, but then it kind of, after I got married, I really didn't do that anymore.
So what about your friends? I mean, what was it like growing up? I mean, was it, can you get us tickets? Can you get us into the show? I mean, did you get a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely had that. I actually went to now it's Harvard Westlake, but it was Westlake at the time. And these were not people saying, you know, can we go to the show? But I happened to be friends with Carol Burnett's daughter and Dean Martin's daughter were my friends at school. But I did have, yeah, I remember I loved taking like a girlfriend to Vegas for the weekend, and we would, you know, sit in the audience of my dad's show, and he would always mention me and have me stand up and wave to the crowd. So I remember, you know, it's I felt very important, and everyone was looking, you know, so that was kind of fun.
It was a fun time.
Those kinds of things, yeah. But yeah, now, you know, I could do my dad's show. I mean, I still, it's amazing, you know, he's still working, and he's actually going to Vegas this week.
Oh my gosh, he's amazing.
And he'll be 90 in May.
Oh my gosh, what a wonderful way to have your, speaking of your dad, so when you were a little girl, did he have a dream for you, what he wanted you to be, or did he care about you feeling good? You know, what do you feel good doing, Mindy? You know, what's fun for you?
No, I think he always said, Mindy's going to be an actress.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, he would, even now, sometimes if he'll mention me, he'll still kind of say, oh, she's an actress. Not that, you know, that'd be great to do, you know, and I did that movie with Jeff, but I think he still thinks of a stand-up or a comic, the women of, you know, in the past, and he sees it as sort of, you know, of course there was always Joan Rivers, but like, you know, years ago it was a different time for women. You know, he saw them like on the road with a suitcase, and
sure,
I mean, that happens a lot, of course, but I think he always saw me as being an actress,
but he cared about you in a sense where he wanted you to feel good in what you did. I mean, he wasn't telling you what to do, because, you know, there's some people out there that want their kids to be doctors and lawyers and whatever, singers, but the kid really doesn't want to do it, you know, the little girl,
right.
But I love the fact.
I think he saw me as a performer when I would, you know, imitate people and be funny, and I was one of those kids that always wanted to be with the grown-ups, really, more than the kids my age and my mom and her friends. So, you know, he saw me as funny and a performer type, so that's why, you know, I certainly wanted that also, you know, and he was very happy to...
Supportive, yeah, he was cherishing. Yeah. What about your husband? Is your husband in the same line of work, or is he completely different?
Well, it's funny, because my husband actually was a DJ on Kiss FM in the 80s, like with Rick Dees.
Oh, my gosh!
Yeah, and then he has been in radio ever since, and he syndicates radio shows, but he's very, very supportive. He kind of, you know, manages me or handles, you know, when I'm doing a job, what's going on, and he helps me write, and he goes to my shows, and he's just great with that. But he's also on the side, he's a musician, he plays the trumpet. He has a similar, more of a creative mentality than, you know, say he were a lawyer or something like that. So it goes, he's very supportive, and you know, he's great handling the business end of things because I'm just, I have no clue about that.
You have no clue about the business. I understand.
No, or even like, where's the elevator? I don't know.
So do you practice some of your material on him before the show, you said?
No, he writes with me.
He writes with you.
Yeah, he helps me with the material. So we worked, because I was never a writer. I'm more a storyteller. I don't tell like a joke per se. So he helps me, you know, flesh out and write, you know, what the bits are going to be and things like that. So yeah, he's great with that.
So I noticed that you're starting to perform. You started in the Midwest. I want to know when you're coming to Orange County.
I know.
When are you coming down?
Yeah, that would be great. No, I mean, I was just in Milwaukee, actually, at this Pottawatomie, which is a casino. I got to work in the same showroom that my dad works in there, which was really exciting, with Louis Anderson, who was great. And, yeah, you know, I've been in Vegas and New York, maybe something in the summer, but hopefully that would be great. I mean, I don't know yet, but that would be terrific.
You'll keep us posted. So are you going to be in L.A. coming up? Or?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm in L.A. You know, as I said, I'm at the Laugh Factory, you know, quite often, a few times a month. And then I'm going to be at this club, Flappers, April 28th, which is in Burbank. And that's a great club, you know, and just working on things and hopefully doing more. I was in Princeton, New Jersey recently with I did a little tour, which was really a lot of fun, and we're hoping to work together again with Sheba Mason.
Oh, yes.
Who's a comic for like 10 years. She's actually the daughter of Jackie Mason. And then Jill Kimmel, who's Jimmy Kimmel's sister, who's a great comic. I mean, they're not just, you know, it's like I did a show with, you know, Kevin Hart's brother's cousin's dry cleaner. I mean, these girls are really good.
So. Right.
And that was, so it was called Heiresses of Comedy, and it was really fun and great, and, you know, we're hoping to do more things together like that, too.
And what's it like? I mean, how did you draw straws? Who was going to go first, you know? Was it you or Sheba? Or?
Yeah, no, we just, you know, we each did, like, the same amount of time, maybe, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes, and I really didn't care. You know, it wasn't like one was the headliner per se. We just each kind of, you know, did our time and an MC introduced the next one. So it was very much an equal kind of a thing, the three of us. And we're all three very different. So I think it was a fun show to watch, and we really had a great time together.
So when you do get to Orange County, you will let us know, right? And how?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. How can people reach you?
I know. Well, I'm on Twitter at Mindy Rickles. And then I have a Mindy Rickles, also a Facebook page.
Excellent.
And I always, when I'm on Twitter, I always, you know, give out the dates of places I'm performing next. And so I'll definitely be doing that. But no, it's really been a lot of fun. And my husband, you know, like I said, he's so supportive, and it's been great to have him, you know, helping and working on this.
Oh, he sounds like a great guy. And, you know, I work with a lot of women that are still out there waiting for Mr. Right to come by. And it's just great to hear your story, because some people really give up and they think, you know, it's not possible, you know, and to even have your career and have a man really cherish you and what you're loving to do. My husband, you know, he's great with me as well. And it's, you know, it's just so great to hear that, you know, you have such a great story, and your kids and your husband and your dad and mom, I mean, your friends, everybody's really supportive. And you know, we need more laughter, I believe, in our society. So I'm so grateful to hear your story and what you're doing, because I just believe it's, you know, it's just something out there we want to hear more of, more fun, more comedy. My father was a funny guy, and he, you know, he used to do imitations for fun. And so I was raised in a house with a lot of fun, you know, hearing your dad and the Jackie Masons of the world. So I have a real, I have a real appreciation for that. And I'm just so happy to get to have you on my show today. And
thank you. It's something great.
Oh, no, it's fun. So anybody out there that maybe perhaps you want to share with them, you know, they're married, they have kids, and they're a little apprehensive about going out there and doing something that they enjoy that's fun for them. Do you have any suggestions for them to break that fear, that barrier?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if it's something that you love and that you've wanted to do, as I said, my kids being older, it's been a lot easier to do. And when it's something that isn't like a full-time kind of a thing, I think it helps a lot in terms of balancing, for me personally. I mean, of course, you know, so many women work and have their families and they balance it. For me personally, I wouldn't be able to do that. But I think, you know, you definitely should do that, even volunteering, which I've done with very young kids. You know, I think if you feel like, oh, maybe you can't work, but to make time to do things, volunteering or things that make you feel good about yourself, because even though, you know, of course you're kids and you take pride in them and whatever, but it's not, I think every woman, I shouldn't say every woman, because I think many women are completely satisfied to just raise their kids, and even as they're older, and they get all their fulfillment out of that. But for me personally, I felt that as they got older, I needed to have some other things that were just for me that I could put into my schedule, that whether it be volunteering or stand-up, that I really felt I was good at and made me feel good about myself. And then when I come home to my kids, you know, I'm even in a better place mentally, because I know that I'm also satisfying these other, you know, needs in myself.
Absolutely. And I'm also hearing that you're probably a great negotiator. And that's one of the key things. And I know that we're approaching a break. Paul's giving me the eye. It's break time. So if you'll just hold on, and we'll come back and discuss more with Mindy Rickles.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, let's pick it back up with Kathy and her guest, Mindy Rickles. Hey, can I ask a question, Kathy, here?
Yes, you may.
Yes, I may. Well, thank you.
Mother may I.
Wow, that was very informal. What if she said no? I wasn't for sure she'd let me in at all. No, we had some Twitter questions come in here, and so I thought this one's kind of clever here. And I'll preface it by saying I used to be an entertainment publicist years ago, so I got to meet people like Robin Williams and some others, and they were, and this would apply to them as well. Was your dad funny at home, or is that just a persona that he puts on? Is I guess we picture the comedians, well, it must be a laugh a day, you know, all day long he's just cracking jokes or something. Is that part of his personality, or is he somebody different when he's home? Because I know Robin Williams was actually pretty quiet when he was off stage.
Yeah, people always ask that question. I think growing up, you know, he was very into, when he wasn't working at home, watching, you know, baseball games and things like that. But no, I mean, that's him. There are many comics that are funny on stage and really not funny in life.
Yeah, I met a number of them. It always surprises me because you think, oh my God, this is going to be wonderful. I'm going to go to dinner with somebody, and they're actually pretty quiet. It's something that comes out of them when they go on stage. It's another persona.
Right, and I think I always heard that Lucille Ball, who was so brilliant on mm-hmm. the show, was not even funny in life. And but my dad, no, he's naturally funny. But at home, no, he wouldn't be necessarily. I mean, of course, there were times, but it's not like he's just funny on stage. He would be funny at dinner,
yeah.
Which is like sort of how I would be. It's like when he is out and growing up, if we were out with people, then he would be completely funny when there's, you know, like an audience there. He wouldn't necessarily. He could be funny at home, but that he wasn't, you know, he was not looking to do that.
I want to.
He's always been naturally funny.
I wish I could go in the Wayback Machine, you know, the time machine here, and be there that first time you brought a boy home. What the boy is thinking. I'm going to go home to meet Don Rickles. Oh, my God. This is. I'm going to get insulted left and right here.
But you, right. They'd be very frightened, but my father probably was like. Wow, you really want to be with her? So, it's not like, oh, my daughter, you know, with a rifle and we're in the Old West.
Yeah, exactly. This is the hockey puck you're going to go out with tonight here? Yeah, exactly.
No, it was more, take her off my hand.
Please.
Right. It was very much like that. God, let her get off the gravy train. I'm thrilled.
Right.
Yeah, I did date a deputy sheriff at one point, which that was, he was a very sweet guy, but my dad couldn't completely get his head around that.
Oh.
He wasn't Jewish. That might have been
That might have been it, too, or something.
It was a compatibility issue, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Oh, wow.
It must be, and so you went to school at, obviously, Harvard Westlake's a famous school where a lot of famous celebrities send their kids. What do you all talk about when you're all just, do you talk about your parents or do you just sort of ignore that? And I mean, I guess,
you know,
it's kind of, it would seem weird to be hanging out with the children of lots of other celebrities here. So does that, so do you just sort of agree not to talk about all that and you just treat each other as normal kids or does that come up? It must come up.
Well, it's funny. I mean, that was, like I said, I was probably, you know, 14, 15. I mean, I haven't necessarily, aside from the Newhart kids who are adults now, mm-hmm. been friends with celebrity kids, although in those days when I was in school with them, I mean, I would go over to Jody Hamilton's house, who is Carol Burnett's daughter, mm-hmm. and, you know, Carol would be coming on from her show, and Jody would say, Mindy, imitate my mom. At dinner, Mom, look, Mindy's going to imitate. I'm not.
Oh my!
And Carol's
gosh.
Like, yeah, that's really interesting. I'm tired.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm
yeah.
Not, so, I'm not doing that.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and I remember Dean Martin's daughter. Well, her parents were divorced, but he mm-hmm. would take her to Chasen's for dinner every Sunday, mm-hmm. and you know, take her out shopping, and all, and I just thought, oh my God, you know, she. It seems so exciting. I
yeah,
mean, I,
right.
you know, had a very kind of pretty grounded growing up, even though, you know, my dad was famous.
He wasn't buying you a new Ferrari for your 15th birthday or something. Right?
No, definitely. And nowadays when I see, you know, all of the way it is, not even for kids of celebrities, just in general with what these kids get, it's just... It's a whole, I can't even comprehend.
And how do they keep these kids from just going off the deep end? I look at, I'm sorry to pick somebody up, but you look at Kanye West and some of those kind of people, or
right.
Or P. Diddy, whatever he calls himself this week here, and some of the kids,
right.
stuff, parties he's throwing. His kids are getting like Bentleys for their 16th birthday.
Yeah, no, I don't really get, I mean, even like the Kylie Jenners, I mean,
yeah.
She's 18, so... No, I don't even comprehend it, and I don't think it's a good thing at all, because there's no way, when I think, I mean, when I was 18, I feel like I was 12, you know, so, and, you know, there's nothing to look forward to. I mean, growing up, I, you know, obviously, my parents were well off, but I certainly didn't get, you know, I got nice things, but nothing like today, and you really didn't see these other kids of quote celebrities. They didn't get those things either.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know, they really Jody. You know, they had very normal upbringings. Nobody got these crazy.
You know, the thing. I'm sorry to keep jump in here, but the thing I saw when I was a press, this is back in the 80s. I'm dating myself. I just turned 60, so I handled Johnny Mathis and Anthony Quinn, Jose Feliciano, a bunch of people like that back in the 80s. Uh-huh. And I got to meet some of the older stuff. I got to meet Jimmy Stewart and some of these other, and I got to go over to their house. Jimmy lived off of, I think, Camden or someplace over there.
Jimmy Stewart lived, I forgot the name of the street, right down the street from Lucille Ball.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And in the flat part of Beverly Hills down there.
And the house next door, I mean, of course, now they tore it down and built one of these, you know, mega mansion things. But
yes,
a beautiful home. And right next door, the lot they had, and it was just a garden. And it was just beautiful because we would drive. We lived near there, and I remember driving, you know, whether it was back and forth from school, we would always pass that street and also Lucy's house there.
Well, and the point I was going to make is, so I go over to Jimmy Stewart's house, and it's a big house, but it's not anything that unusual than you'd see in kind of a nice big suburb, an upper end suburb of some city. It wasn't an 80,000 square foot house.
I know.
It looked like a kind of a regular house.
Yes.
It was just and I would think, oh my God, Jimmy Stewart lives in a house that's maybe, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 square feet or something here or whatever it was. It wasn't massively huge. And other celebrities, you know, now, like you say, they tear these things down and they got to build these monstrous houses, and they flaunt it all so much more than in that era and even before.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't understand that at all because, yes, growing up, if you said to me you could have any house in the, you know, I would say, oh, I would love Dean Martin's old house, like these interesting, wonderful houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I TiVo all these old Columbo episodes. And like when you go Columbo. To the rich person, Mrs. Von Columbo.
Go Google Columbo for all of you listening here. Yeah,
oh,
right.
That's funny.
I know, right? Exactly.
That's so funny.
You know, and it was a beautiful house, but it was never, these crazy 30,000 square foot, I think Mark Wahlberg just built a 40,000 square foot house.
Oh, my God.
I don't understand it, and I don't even understand for their kids. I'm going to bring a friend over. I mean...
like a hotel. I'll see in the other, you know, there's 500 rooms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby's lost.
Oh, my God.
A week from Thursday.
Like, have you ever seen, I've never been in, but Spelling's house, Aaron Spelling's house is going to be one of the bigger.
I was in that house. Yes.
What's that like? It looks literally like on a bluff kind of, and it looks like a giant resort. And it's a house.
Absolutely. I think I was there once when one of my kids was little for an Easter egg hunt.
Easter egg hunt, yeah. Take 5 weeks to find the Easter eggs in that house.
Exactly. Yeah, and I said, I'm going to go use the bathroom, which was really my chance to go run through. You know? And it was absolutely, I mean, I was like looking for the front desk.
Yeah, exactly,
crazy.
Right.
And I don't even get that. And you can't. You know, it's like how much furniture, everything's going to look like just a massive space. I've never understood that. And growing up, and the greatest houses I was ever in were these old, you know, like Sidney Sheldon's house, these older houses.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, I don't get that at all. That to me.
I was in Harry Cohn's.
About showing off, as he said, and I don't understand it. Really.
Harry Cohn's, the famous head of Columbia Studios, old house was Glenn Ford, I think, or Mike Douglas bought it, from somebody like that. I was in that.
Oh, really?
And I thought that was pretty big. I thought that was pretty big in the 80s, but then they started going massive like this.
Right. No. I think like maybe 10,000 feet would have been the hugest thing then.
Yeah, if that. Half of that. Half of the other homes are half of that.
Even the famous houses in L.A., and there's a new book out called West of Eden, which is about famous homes, you know, gray stone. I mean, those are large, but Beverly Hills. And the history, I mean, to me, the history of homes, I love all of that.
Mindy, that brings me to... go ahead.
No. I got to ask one more quick question. Did anybody ever come up and ring your doorbell? Because you literally, in those days, in the 60s, I didn't see this in the 80s, but they said like the 60s or 70s, you could literally go up and ring Jimmy Stewart's door and he would answer it.
Oh, I'm sure. We did have a gate in the front, I have to say. And I actually, this is just a side thing, but one boyfriend I was dating who kind of went a little crazy one night and tried to like... Klein.
Oh, no.
Father on the button in the house. He's like, go home, Joe.
Oh, my.
Embarrassing yourself.
Oh, my gosh.
No, but we did, yeah, we did have a gate. But, I mean, I totally get that. Most houses you could, absolutely.
Yeah, in the flat part of Beverly Hills, you could literally see the house, and you could just walk up and ring the doorbell, and
right.
The celebrity would come answer the door and say hi. And sometimes the tour buses would do that, and they'd come out and wave at the bus or something.
I know, and now it's like 50 bodyguards.
Yeah, wow. Exactly, right.
Gosh, Mindy, you know, you were talking about that book, but did you ever consider writing a book? Because I bet you have the best stories.
Oh, yeah, just what it was like to be in that era. And that you're kind of in a transitional era between the old, you were around the Dean Martins and the Rat Pack kind of stuff as a kid, and then into the newer era of, I don't know what we call it now, but
now
old Hollywood, new Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say I was mortified the other day because my younger son is 14. I called a meme a mem.
Oh, yikes.
What are you saying, Mom? Mem? And I thought myself, like, you know, 100, like I was in the assisted living.
Yeah, exactly.
So old, Mom. You know, it's a meme. But, no, I mean, my father actually wrote two books, but one was about a lot of his experiences, you know, with the Rat Pack and all that. I mean, people have said that to me, but I really, I don't see myself doing that at this point. I mean, my parents are kind of private. Not that I would say anything. That
yeah, not a tell-all,
just
a fun look.
Like, yeah, what's it like, you know, being the daughter?
Yeah, on the other side of the gates.
Said that to me. Right, exactly.
I mean, and you're just so humble and just love listening to
I always
to
thought it was kind
story.
Of a kick when I came from the Midwest and I got to be a press agent. So I'm sitting here, and I remember once walking out of the Merv Griffin show, and I forgot who I was in there with, but I walk out, and of course there's people lined up for autographs. And this girl comes running up to me, and she looks at me and says, are you somebody? I said, no.
Right.
You know, you're looking for the one behind me here. I'm nobody here. And I just thought it was sort of weird to be on that side of the gate and not the other side of the gate, you know.
Right. No, it's very interesting to see all of that.
So for today, you don't want to write a book, but maybe someday.
No, maybe, you know, at some point. But no, I don't think so right now.
And what about your comedy?
You know, I like to tell stories. Well, I don't really, when I'm normally doing stand-up, I actually talk about my mother, but I don't really talk about, I don't say, oh, my father, and I don't really discuss him unless I'm doing something, a specific tour where, for example, that Heiresses of Comedy, where the audience was coming to see because they knew. You
the
know,
second generations, yeah, right.
Right. No, I do tell stories about growing up, but things more like not necessarily about celebrities, but say when I would go away to camp and my parents, you know, dropping me off and hating camp and them leaving me there, things like that, not so much.
Could be anybody,
so Dean Martin comes over to me and he says, you going to eat that olive? You know, I don't know.
No. Have you put out any CDs, though, where people can purchase some of your material? That
no, you've... I don't at this point.
Did they even do that anymore? You're dating yourself. I don't know.
Really?
They put out CDs and stuff like that?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'll, you know, work in a club or somewhere and they'll say, don't forget, you know, Bob Jones, comic, you know, please buy my CD. And I'm in my head and I'd say this about myself. Who the hell wants to buy Bob Jones?
Yeah, right.
Or put the sticker Bob Jones on my car, and I put a Mindy Rickles sticker on their car.
Yeah.
God bless you. You need help.
All right, there goes my next question. I was going to ask for one here, but okay.
Right. I don't have that, but, you know, at some point, yeah, that'd be great.
Do you have any advice for people considering comedy?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Yeah. As my dad would say, rejection, rejection, rejection.
Yeah.
And I'm like, thanks, Dad, you said rejection. I'm like, you said.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, I think it's very difficult as it is, you know, if you're going to be an actor. I mean, there are all these open mics. You know,
but more so. We've had a couple of comedians. I don't know why Kathy keeps booking female comedians on the show here, but we've had several others that there's some people on here. The funniest housewives of Orange County. They performed at the Improv and some other local comedians. And I just know from my own observation of watching this for years, you know, it's tough being an actress. It's tough being a singer. But you don't expect to go out and bomb every night. When you say your lines, you don't say, well, if I remember half of them, you know, if I hit half the notes. When you're a comedian, they don't laugh at every joke.
No.
Not even half of them.
With their arms crossed, yeah. No, it's very, you get that immediate reaction, and when it's not good, it's just, you know, dead silent. Of course, I've never experienced
that. No, really.
It's just dead silent, and if I say, you know, on Golden Pond, they don't know what that is. So, I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, like I said, the only reason, even though I always knew I was funny, that I did the stand-up was because I happened to meet a very successful comic, Jeff Garlin, who said, I can
very funny guy, yeah,
to get into, you know, a meeting with this person. Otherwise, it's just really doing these open mics and hoping that the club owner likes you and will start putting you on and hanging out at these clubs. And see, these are all things that wouldn't have been really feasible for me. Being older, I live in Malibu. I have my kids. You know, I'm not 20 where I can go hang at these clubs.
Yeah, till 4 in the morning, right.
Right. And say, you know, oh, listen, when can I go up? I'll go up any time for 3 minutes. I mean, you just have to really, you know, be hustling like that and meet other comics and hope maybe they'll put you onto a lineup somewhere that they have and things like that.
Yeah. You said something earlier, though, that was profound. You really got to know yourself. And I believe the more an individual knows who they are, the better they can relate with other people. And
oh, absolutely. Because telling stories about my husband, my kids, my growing up, I mean, I'm pretty honest up there. I mean, certain things I say, you know, oh, that can't be true. But most of the time it is. So you're really, it's almost like you're doing, you know, a therapy session on the stage
in front of
all these strangers.
Pretty much.
And I don't think I could have done that even in my 30s or, you know, it's really, you're very vulnerable. I mean, unless, you're regardless, but especially when you're talking about yourself and your life, you know, you're in definitely a very vulnerable position.
So let me ask you then, is that why, and that's the point I was going to get with all these female comedians, why are there still, in this modern era, so few women comedians, more than ever before, but still a small percentage, aren't there? Right. It seems like it's still a small group.
Right, more than ever before, but I think because most people don't see women, they don't want to be laughing at women. I mean, looking back, when I was dating and I liked some guy, I would think, if he laughed at me at dinner, like everything I thought was a test, oh, he likes me. No, maybe he thought you were funny, but most men are not necessarily into funny women. That's not what you want to see normally from a woman. And I think a lot of these female comics, which I don't get, are so dirty now, and their jokes are very weak, but they throw in the F word and very, you know, crude, you know, language.
Oh, they're tough. They're as tough as the guys. I mean, that's always
right.
The people
they're
like
trying to be. Yeah, and I'm not like that. I mean, I'm more, I would say, like a Rita Rudner type.
Yeah.
So, which a lot of people, I mean, she's very, you know, she's been around forever and very famous, but I'm sure most 20-year-olds don't know who that is. But they're very much like with the swearing, trying to be like a guy. I mean, I can't get on stage in a hoodie with my face freshly scrubbed like most female comics. I mean, yes, if it were me, I'd go up in a tiara, you know, in a carriage, but I know that's a little much.
It might be a little over the top.
But you know,
right, I try to find a middle ground. But, I mean, most female comics that are successful are very crude or very like, I'm a guy.
Yeah.
So I think it's harder. It's always been that way. It's better now. But for women to be seen as funny, people just don't want to laugh at women as readily as they do men.
But you said you were vulnerable, and I love that, because being vulnerable is being very feminine, and you're obviously in touch with that side of you. You feel good when you're up there, and lovable women are more productive than productive women are lovable. And you've demonstrated.
Oh, see, that's the bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, it's true, though. I just love hearing how authentic you are. And, you know, I think a lot of people go on stage and they probably want to be somebody else. And you're the real deal, Mindy. And that's why I wanted you on my show. And I know that Paul was giving me a bit, how come you have so many women? Because I believe that we need more people like you to make it a better society. You know, life is so serious. And to go out and hear some wonderful comedy from an authentic individual, to me, is worth that.
Is there a female voice that's missing in comedy? You say you're authentic, but I always wonder, and you say women aren't seen as being funny, but there's got to be, women have fun. My mother was funny, I always thought, and my dad always thought that appealing. I mean, she wasn't a comedian, but...
Yeah, no, I've always, I mean, I don't really get that, because, you know, I was funny, and I love, you know, all my friends are have, if they're not personally funny, they have a great sense of humor. I mean, no, I think there are plenty of comics, you know, that are great.
There are plenty of funny women, but we just don't see them on stage for some reason here. I wonder if it's an intimidating atmosphere. It's the last of the boys' club.
Well, yeah, and it's still absolutely a boys' club. And again, I think many of these very successful female comedians, I personally don't get some of them because I just see them being very dirty and trying to be like a guy.
Right.
And I don't get that. And I'm the first one. I mean, I love to see funny female comedians.
Right. Well, that's always Sarah Silverman's rap, you know, that she's a guy's girl or something. You know,
yeah, she's definitely a guy's girl. I mean, I always liked, I wouldn't say she was a girly girl. I mean, I always liked Kathy Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now she might be a little different. But no, there haven't been that many. I liked Margaret Cho, although mm-hmm. she can get very crazy now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think she can be really funny. But, no, I don't think, I can't, like, list off, like, five really funny female comedians off the top of my head. I mean, I always thought Ellen DeGeneres was very funny when she did stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Her writing was just so fantastic and, you know, she was very funny.
It didn't have the hard edge that some of the others seemed to have.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, her writing was so fantastic that she didn't even need to throw any... I mean, her, you know, she's very anti to the extreme, I think, but anything that's even slightly risque. But, yeah, I don't think there's that many.
Mindy, do you think you're born with it?
This comedy thing?
I do. Personally, I mean, I think that you can... If you're maybe a really good writer, comedy writer, and, you know, you could be a great comedy writer and not funny, but there's a technique you could probably, you can learn, I think, that audiences will laugh because either the writing's great and you kind of learn the timing. But being funny, I mean, for me, I didn't have technique. Like, I mean, I just have been funny. I know I've just always been funny, and I understood that. But, I mean, I do think... There, you can learn to a degree.
Because the jokes are very formulistic to a certain degree. There are certain, I know they even teach different formulas for jokes. I've forgotten what they call
them.
But
I mean, like I said, I don't tell jokes. And, I mean, maybe I'll tell one or two, but I really don't know how to tell jokes. So, for me, it's more storytelling. So, that can be kind of harder because the audience has to get your persona and who you are and then understand, you know, you in that situation and why that's funny. And if they don't like you for whatever reason, you know, then it's not going to go well.
And they got to stick with you for the length of that story. It's not a ba-bing, ba-bing,
no,
you know.
No, it's not right. They got to, exactly. And I think, like, Louis C.K. is mm-hmm. able to do that with
yes.
long stories and whatever. But you have to like, that's the thing I learned early on with stand-up. They have to like you. You have to get them on your side right away. If you don't, you're done. And you could go on, and you could have the most brilliant thing you're going to tell in 10 minutes, but it's not going to matter, because if they are not on your side for whatever reason when you first get up there, then it's not going to happen. If they're on your side, then you could do things that aren't that great, and they're going to love it because they love you, and they feel, you know, a relationship with you.
Yeah. You think that's why they accepted your dad? I mean, your dad certainly had the Merchant of Venom. I mean, he came after the famous stories of him going after Sinatra in the beginning and stuff. And,
right.
and rather
you know,
than
I mean,
hating it, they loved it. So, you know.
Right. I think initially he always told me, no, they didn't. I mean, he would do shows, you know, at 8, 10, and, you know, 12, and
right.
3 o'clock in the morning. And they would be, the club owner would be, get out, and he'd have to run back. because the jokes weren't, they weren't laughing, and so then he would start insulting guys at the bar, you know.
Right.
Like, what did you eat for dinner? You smell like fit. Whatever he would say, and they would, that's how he started with that, and then Frank Sinatra loving him really brought him to another.
And Frank Sinatra was not known to be somebody that you could make fun of. I mean, he was not some, most comedians were scared to death of him. Yeah, right.
Exactly. And because he loved my dad, that's true, when my dad, he really brought in Judy Garland and famous people.
Yeah,
and that's how,
that's what they said, right?
He started, got to another level than, say, a Buddy Hackett or something.
Right.
Again, someone that your audience probably doesn't.
Buddy Hackett. Yes, we're going
to
go.
You never know. There's a lot of baby boomers listening to this show. My friends in Chicago and
Buddy Hackett with the baby face and the dirty mouth here. Yeah, no, they used to have this just funny, just looking at him say dirty stuff was funny. You know.
Yeah, and he was funny. But, you know, there were, most of those guys were like Catskills or even like a Jackie Mason. And I think Frank Sinatra's, my dad always says, took him to another level. Where, you know, he became more than, more successful than that.
Wow.
Is it, and I hope you don't take offense at this, but is it an ethnic kind of thing? There seem to be, you just rattled off a half a dozen Jewish comics. I don't know why we perceive that to be so many.
I don't know. I mean, I mean, nowadays you wouldn't say that. It's so different, but I don't know. Jews feel pain a lot. I don't, I mean, I'm a very dark person, actually, and if I didn't, if I wasn't able to, you know, make fun of things that have happened to me or whatever, it wouldn't be good. I think that's an ethnic thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up around the, you learned bantering back and forth? I always thought the Irish were a good story. I'm Irish, so everybody, all my relatives were funny and told stories, you know. I see where that comes from. The George Carlin
movies, where he shows himself, you know, these scenarios of growing up, and he said, I mean, I think, you know, they're kind of characters, and for whatever reason. Definitely.
And you know what? Okay, I'm going to leave you with a joke, Mindy. Are you, ready?
Okay. She's been dying to tell you this the whole time.
I'm going to put it to the test.
I'm going to tell you. Okay. And then there's an open mic I want you to go to.
I think that's what it really is, Mindy. I think she really is hoping one of you will pull her up on stage here.
No, but I married a great Jewish guy, and I'm Italian Catholic. And you know what? We heard
Italian and Jewish to me are the same.
Well, we heard someone in Tahoe one time, and he said the difference between Jews and Italians is 20 pounds. So you get to figure out who has the 20 pounds.
Exactly.
It's been an honor to have you on the show, Mindy, and thank your husband
too.
He's a great guy, and your kids. And you know what, ladies, if you're listening out there, yes, you can be a woman with a career. You can have a family, and you can have your career. And thank you so much. It was so much fun, Mindy.
And it's never too late to get started. Well, how do they reach you again? Where do they find out where you're touring? Is there a website or something?
I'm Mindy Rickles. I'm on Twitter, at Mindy Rickles.
And I hate to say this, but let's spell Rickles so nobody misspells it here.
Right. R-I-C-K-L-E-S.
Right.
And I'm also on Facebook.
Okay. Well, we hope you'll come back on OC Talk Radio another time. It's been fun.
And I'll look forward to seeing you in the OC, Mindy. Thank you so much.
Definitely.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks
a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, Kathy, I want you to go get some more comedians for us here. This was, I always have a good time listening to all the comedians that you bring on here. So, anything you want to add here?
Well, I've got my group tonight, talktokathy.com, if you want more information. And
I think you're a frustrated stand-up. I think that's it. I think we've got to get you on stage.
I just love being around happy people.
There you go. Well, we're happy that you're here. All right.
Talking to Kathy, the only show that teaches you how to get better results, with your host, Kathy Katz. For more info or comments, feel free to visit our website at talktokathy.com. That's Kathy with a C.